going. So there you go. So anyway, good afternoon. It was the first week we came to the country. It started with a series of brilliant performances by our athletes at the Olympic Games, particularly the rowers, and it was added to by the Chiefs' win in the Super Rugby competition. Sadly, that turned into tragedy on Saturday night when news came through that two young New Zealand soldiers, Lance Corporal Rory Malone and Lance Corporal Tralee Durai, were killed in action in Afghanistan. Both of them were 26 years of age and both based out of Burnham near Christchurch. Lance Corporal Malone was killed instantly by rifle fire when he tried to rescue his injured company commander, one of the other six New Zealand Defence personnel injured in the attack. Lance Corporal Durai was also hit by rifle fire and he died as he was being evacuated by helicopter from the site of the attack. Our thoughts are with their family and friends during this incredibly difficult time as they come to terms with their enormous grief. The soldiers were killed and injured when they went to the aid of the NDS, a special branch of the Afghan National Police, who were under heavy attack by a group of insurgents after being ambushed. The dangers our troops currently face in Bamiyan was again reinforced earlier today in New Zealand time when a small group of insurgents attacked the New Zealand base near Doabi. I've been advised that there were no New Zealand soldiers injured during this attack. Our soldiers have worked tirelessly to restore stability to the province. They show incredible courage in serving their country, even knowing the considerable risks that they face. The deaths of these two young soldiers bring the total number of New Zealand soldiers who have lost their lives in Afghanistan since we first sent troops there in 2003 to 2007. I received a call from Australian Prime Minister Julia Gillard last night to express her condolences for the loss of our soldiers. US Secretary of Defence Leon Panetta has also called Defence Minister Jonathan Coleman to express his condolences. The flags on the Parliament forecourt are flying at half mast today in recognition of the ultimate sacrifice these two young brave soldiers have made serving their country. They'll also fly at half mast on the day of their funerals. Just in terms of my activity this week, later tonight, Deputy Prime Minister Bill English, Treaty of Waitangi Negotiations Minister Chris Finlayson, and I will be meeting with the Māori Party co-leaders. The meeting was organised with the Māori Party earlier last week as part of our ongoing discussions about water rights. This was following the interim report from the Waitangi Tribunal and our request for them to report back by 24th of August. With regards to our request, I'm pleased to confirm the Waitangi Tribunal has today indicated it will endeavour to accommodate our request and deliver a truncated interim report by 24th of August. We appreciate the Tribunal's willingness to respond by that date. We're looking forward to getting an update from Māori Affairs Minister Peter Sharples as to how the hui in Wellington went this afternoon. There will be no decisions or agreements to come out of our meeting tonight as we're still waiting on the Waitangi Tribunal's recommendations, but it's important to keep a regular dialogue going with the Māori Party on this issue. In terms of the rest of the week, the House is in recess, so I plan to be in Christchurch tomorrow, the Manawa electorate on Wednesday and Auckland on Thursday, but this will obviously depend on when the bodies are returned of the New Zealand soldiers killed in action or returned to New Zealand, and so my diary is subject to change. Questions?
The Minister of Māori Affairs is not happy at your demands on the tribunal, and some iwi leaders are calling on the Māori Party to walk away if the government doesn't listen to the tribunal. Do you expect a frosty meeting tonight with the Māori Party?
No.
Does the report back by the 24th, is that enough? Does that mean boost your chance of getting the sales program through this year?
Well, what it does hopefully do is allow us to incorporate the thoughts of the Waitangi Tribunal into the thought process that the government's having. We gave an indication to the tribunal that if we didn't receive the information by August the 24th, that made a potential sale of those shares in 2012 more challenging for the government. So it's great news that they are looking to accommodate our wishes, and we look forward to seeing the original report and then factoring that into the overall decisions that the government
makes.
They
weren't very happy that you had necessarily made that request, though. They were a bit snippy in their response.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, we sought advice before we went and asked them whether it was possible for them to report back on the 24th of August. We didn't receive any advice from either our QC or from Crown Law that there was anything inappropriate in us asking for a date a little bit earlier. They had indicated that it was likely to be in September, so there wasn't a lot of difference in the timing. It just suited our timetable a little bit better. And we are very hamstrung by the fact that we can only take Mighty River Power to the market at times when there's audited accounts. So we don't have lots of flexibility, and they are literally October, November this year, or March, April of next year.
How much would it cost you if you couldn't take Mighty River Power to list it this year? What would it cost you in interest payments on the debt you'd have to raise instead?
Haven't got another calculation, but you know, it's a new world of magnitude of, you know, less than a couple of billion, but more than one. You can apply the interest rate for 6 months that the government borrows. It's a lot of money.
In regard to the process, the tribunal does say most unusual and inappropriate for the council, the way it's acted for the Crown, and reminds the Crown about the need for judicial independence and maintaining separation of powers. I mean, they're quite strong statements about...
Well, as I say, we sought Crown Law advice and advice from David Goddard, QC, and neither of them were of the view that there's anything inappropriate in what we were doing. I mean, we made it clear that if they can't accommodate our timeline, then no, we'll appreciate that. But we were just simply pointing out that there was reference in their initial findings to us that a submission made by Treasury on behalf of the Crown seemed to have indicated to them that we weren't under enormous time pressure and therefore September would be okay. And in fact, we are under time pressure for the reasons that they may not have fully understood, and so we're simply pointing that out.
There have already been criticisms about good faith. Do you not think this feeds further into that and could, you know, potentially compromising the process?
Well, quite the opposite. I mean, we're demonstrating tremendous good faith by wanting to get their report before we actually make any decisions and therefore factor their report into our findings.
Would it be fair to say that government has been kind of stiffening up its legal case should an injunction or an attempted injunction come about?
Sure, I'd characterise it in that way. What I would say is that over the last 3 or 4 years, the government's view has been that it needs to address the issue of water rights. We've been doing that in a variety of different forms, land and water forum being one, direct settlements and negotiations around rights and interests that we've had with Māori, and we're very confident about our legal position and that we are following the right process. We're also mindful of the fact that it's eminently possible that an action may be taken by someone and therefore we need to defend our position in court, and we're confident that we've followed the right and proper process.
Presumably, the government was to act contrary to recommendations of the tribunal, that wouldn't be helpful to any injunction attempt, would it? I mean, there must be some advice on that that suggests it's not going to be helpful for you, it might compromise you.
The Crown has in the past acted against the advice of the Waitangi Tribunal. Obvious example that was around Kupe and also in relation to, I think, oil and gas. There's also a 1990 case in relation to when the Crown wanted to sell broadcasting rights on the 1st of December. They were taking that, the Waitangi Tribunal indicated that they were likely to report back, I think, in the early to mid part of December. Crown actually decided it wanted to press ahead before it got that report, and the High Court upheld the injunction and required the Crown to wait for the advice because it was very close. So there is some sort of precedent there. But in this case, you know, we think it's good news that the Waitangi Tribunal has indicated that they're likely to give us that information on the 24th of August. That helps our process. Still a very tight process for a 2012 sale, subject to a whole lot of other things that might flow from that.
Prime Minister, we've got a poll out tonight that shows that the majority of people don't want to buy shares in the asset. What do you
make of? Well, just looking at the numbers, what I think they show is that firstly about 40% of people do actually want to buy shares or may be interested in buying shares directly, and while I accept that not every New Zealander will be in a position to either want to or be able to afford to buy shares directly, I would make the point that a huge number of New Zealanders are likely to be in a position where they might be able to buy shares indirectly if they want to through effectively a KiwiSaver account or held on behalf of New Zealanders through a variety of other mechanisms like the New Zealand Super Fund. So I would have thought the numbers out of your poll look like quite strong interest, but you know, we'll see how that goes.
Are you not disappointed there's more interest
there? No, I mean, I would have thought those numbers are quite high, actually.
Do you think that the timing issue could have an impact? on the level of demand as well. So if you tried to squeeze two flights into 1 year, for example, that might dampen demand a little bit? Or
that isn't the advice we've had at the moment.
So you don't think it wouldn't have any effect at all?
No, but I mean, I think, subject to the findings of the ITN Tribunal, all the other things that we need to consider to carry out the government's program, and it suits our interests to start that process in 2012 if we can.
Well, I understand the second attack on the Dalabe base. Does this indicate to you that things are becoming more dangerous there, that the insurgents are more brazen, and do you think that the government needs to make any response in terms of extra troops or?
So firstly, in terms of, I think the position in Afghanistan in Bamiyan has been changing over the last 3 or 4 years. So we've been advised that there has been more insurgent activity and a highly threatened assessment in that area for some years now. But in recent times, the government's been receiving advice on what is the right response and whether there's any minor changes that the government might want to mandate defence to undertake. And we have given agreement to the CBF that at an operational level there are some changes that he can make. I wouldn't describe them as dramatic changes. I'm not going to go into, for obvious reasons, in detail all of those, but they will include the likelihood that the patrolling area of the New Zealand Defence Forces will be widened out slightly. And the view from CDF is that that will be likely to provide a greater level of protection to our soldiers. But obviously we're in a combat zone with a better resourced insurgent group at the moment, as we saw by the state of the attack on Saturday night.
Going outside of Bamiyan province?
Correct.
So does that not put the soldiers in more danger by going into Baglan, obviously, where there are more hostile characters?
No, that's not the advice we've had. The advice is the opposite. And the reason for that is that if you look at a situation where we just totally react, it doesn't stop an insurgent activity either being prepared and or undertaken, as we saw on Saturday night. Now, I'm not going to go into all of the details of what we're doing. I wouldn't describe them as dramatic changes. But obviously we're doing the best we can to make sure our soldiers are as safe as possible and fully resourced as we believe they are.
Isn't Baglan a Hungarian or another PRC?
Correct.
So we would be helping them police their area or moving into their area or taking over their area?
We've always had the capacity to do that, and the question would be whether they are fully exercising their responsibilities in the bottom part of that.
Prime Minister, what?
I believe they are.
Well, I'm quite comfortable with the changes that
Prime Minister, what progress do you think President Karzai's made in the last 2 years in combating corruption in his administration?
Well, I think it's very difficult for me to assess that accurately. I mean, I really only see media reports on those matters. I mean, I think everyone accepts there's been an unacceptable level of corruption there. On the other side of the coin, changes are being made, but we can only deal with the circumstances that are in front of us. And we're working as aggressively as we can to deliver stability to that region and to deliver directly the support, aid and assistance that we give.
Will you make another approach to the President on the corruption issue, given that you've lost two more lives?
I'm not sure there's a direct link there in the two. I think they're different issues, actually, but the head of mission raises those issues with the administration.
After the death of Lieutenant Tim O'Donnell, our SAS went back and we used
it
in a subsequent attack on the insurgents involved. Could the SAS
or
a smaller group be used for something similar
this time? We've got no intention of sending the SAS back at this time. I mean, we always reserve the right to do that, but the advice I've had is that wouldn't serve New Zealand's interests well, and it's not our intention at this point to do that. That can change, and it does. I may not inform you, but that's not our intention this time.
Could it be that when the troops were injured and killed and replaced with some SAS or somebody with a higher training ability was used to replace them? In other words, more frontline soldiers put in there?
Again, I'm not going to go into all of the operational issues that the Defence Force use and the decisions they need to make. The SAE skills are specialist skills, and the advice I've had from CDF is that the combat capability of our troops in Bamyan is a very high standard. So there's not a belief that deploying the SAEs would be of tremendous assistance in this particular instance.
So you wouldn't be deploying a different quality of troop or different type of troop in there as a result of it?
I'm not going to go into all of the things that we might look at, but what's fair to say is that we do our best to make sure we protect those soldiers as best we can. There are a variety of different mechanisms we can use to do that. For tactical reasons, it's not necessarily in our interest to go through those blow by blow. I've given you a bit of an indication that the radius of the activities might expand a little bit. There may be other personnel that go to that wouldn't be the SAs.
More labs?
So yeah. It's not going to go through all of those different details.
How are they going to patrol a wider area unless they have more troops and more resources?
You know, I don't think that's an issue that's being presented by CDF as problem. More being their mandate.
Are you aware of whether either of those, the injured or dead soldiers, is in line for any bravery awards?
Far too early for me to know anything about that.
Some critics argue that we're involved in Afghanistan because of the influence of the United States to be a good ally. Do you think we're there for the right reasons?
I think we're there for the right reasons. I mean, it was the Labor government that committed New Zealand back in 2001 with the SAS, and then latterly in 2003 into Bamyan as part of the provincial reconstruction team. It was a UN-mandated mission. We're part of ISAF-NATO operations there. There's a huge number of countries working alongside us. And I think, you know, people need to cast their mind back to the reason why all of these countries decided to go into Afghanistan, and that was really the threat of Al-Qaeda using Afghanistan as a base for international terrorist activity. So, no war is a good war, but on the other side of the coin, as we saw from 9/11, we're also not immune from the activities of those that might plot against us, and where they have a free run, as they had in Afghanistan, that can have dire consequences, as it did in the US.
But we're not here just against the United States.
No, I mean, I think it'd be a long stretch to sort of argue that Helen Clark was trying to close out to the United States, and we've carried on our rotations there. We've given the commitment about when we want to leave Afghanistan. It's 2013. And I think we're doing it for the right reasons, which is the development of the people of Bamyan so they can be self-sufficient.
That's pretty unusual or even regrettable, I think, isn't it, to have a defined withdrawal date and at the same time be expanding the radius that we're working
on? It's two slightly different issues. So the radius is all about our capacity to understand what's fully going on and to be in the best position to ensure that we are less likely to be subjected to insurgent activity. In terms of the defined exit date, well, that's part of the NATO-ISAF agreement that countries will be leaving in an orderly manner, but not everyone going through the keyhole at one time. And Bamyan has always been seen as one of the first provinces, if not the first province, to transition to Afghan rule.
Have you had any talks with ISAF or the Hungarian authorities about going into that area?
Well, I haven't. CDF might have. It's not outside of their mandate to do so. In other words, they have the authority to do so, as I understand it. But they haven't been in the bits that we're talking about in the past, or not in recent times. They may have been there in the past, but not in recent times.
So it's not really an expansion of their role?
No, I wouldn't say it's an expansion of their role.
It's just a change.
Slightly wider radius is the way to describe it.
From memory, when after the Timonol incident, we sent the SAS in because they had a wider roaming brief to go around various provinces, whereas our PRT didn't at that time. Or am I wrong?
Look, I have to check exactly, but the way it's been described to me is it's not outside of the capacity in terms of the operational activity in Afghanistan, but it requires the cabinet to agree to those things. Now, I don't think it's solely unique now. In other words, it's not new, but it hasn't been occurring for some time.
So the wider radius, is that to get a better idea of what's going on in that wider area?
Well, all I can really say is to provide what we believe would be better protection of our people.
So does that mean that the people who are in that area at the moment aren't doing the job that they should be doing?
This means the area of patrol is slightly wider.
So that area, the wider area, is currently being patrolled by other...
Not countries. Necessarily.
So is this about filling a gap? You can see a gap there.
That's one assumption you could draw here.
One of the accusations in the past was that Hungarians didn't go out at night. Is that the fact?
Well, as far as I'm aware, the Hungarians don't go out at night. It's not an Afghanistan, you might have got a piece of it.
Just on
Imperial's
backup opening an upgraded factory to 23 million cigarettes will be reported in Australia each year, and anti-tobacco lobbyists are saying that we're exiting debt.
Right.
Do you agree with that sentiment?
Where's the factory being opened?
In Petone.
In Petone, is it? Look, I mean, every country has to deal with their response to smoking and the impact that they think it has on their people. New Zealand, I think, has been showing that we take that issue very seriously through a variety of different changes. But, where cigarettes are manufactured is probably far less the issue and more people's capacity and affordability of buying them.
So you've got no problem with this?
No.
The Waitangi Tribunal, the minute that came out today, they said that the Crown had changed its submission and that was inappropriate. Is that around the timing? Is that what you're referring to earlier?
I think that's what they're saying, but the Crown's position was that there seemed to be a misunderstanding that we had more flexibility around the time. And so the purpose of the letter was to clarify that we don't have flexibility and to set out a preferred timetable of the Crown. And it's good news that the Waitangi Tribunal look like they can accommodate that. Doesn't mean that any decisions have been made. It certainly doesn't mean that we'll hit a September timetable if the decision to press ahead is made. There are a number of other things that could occur, but that's probably the last date if we were to have a chance of taking over the powers of the market in 2012.
Are you aware of how many we might be procuring injunctions?
I'm not, no.
So do you think you can win a court injunction in a reasonably short space of time to enable you to still go to the market? Is that feasibly possible?
Well, it would depend on a lot. I mean, you're asking a bit of an open-ended question because it depends on what the court application is seeking to achieve. And so there are a variety of different potential ones of those. But if you're asking me overall whether I think the Crown's position is solid, then I think it's rock solid. I mean, we have been in a position where we've acted in good faith to recognise the rights and interests of Māori when it comes to water. There is nothing that, in our view, a change in ownership of Maita River Power that would have any influence on Māori's capacity to register their rights and interests or our capacity to recognise those rights and interests. So this is an argument not about whether Māori have rights and interests, but about whether the change in ownership alters their capacity to have those rights and interests acknowledged. And we don't believe there's anything that alters because we only own 51% of the company, not 100%.
Have you given any more consideration to how you will acknowledge those rights and interests, i.e. hold back some shares or some mechanism to meet their overall demand?
I think the Crown's view is those rights and interests are correctly recorded and acknowledged through direct negotiation river by river, iwi by iwi. And for the most part, that hasn't included shares, clearly, in the past. And that doesn't seem likely to be a logical way of doing that to me, but it's, of course, always possible, I suppose. But hypothetically, but the real issue has been around the sorts of things we've been doing in the Waikato River or Paternal River or Tāne Pasra.
The Māori Party, though, today, and that was who we wrote, and they seem to be suggesting they'd be coming at the back at you with a far more pan-Māori approach, but a national Māori voice rather than necessarily...
Well, I think it's also really important to understand the basis of the meeting with the Māori Party. It's not to reach agreement per se with the Māori Party. It's quite possible, if not probable, that the Māori Party's position will be different to the National Party's position, and the Māori Party have always been opposed to the asset sale issue. So what we did agree was that in good faith, when we received the report from the Waitangi Tribunal, we would sit down and discuss the merits of that and discuss each other's position. So there's quite a bit of difference between a discussion
easier
and
agreement. More difficult to deal with Māori if the iwi leaders group, the Māori council and others are joining together and saying we're actually going to speak on one voice on this or try to, Is that a positive for you as a Crown to deal with that, or is it to make it harder?
I don't think it's possible to characterise it in that way, because there are quite a lot of iwi that would say they have no particular interest in paying iwi solution. So there have been a number of iwi leaders that have publicly made comments directly to that point, and their interest is about their particular river and their particular rights and interests as they see it in relation to that river. And there's quite a wide range of views about what those rights and interests look like.
Just to change the topic, have you been following the statistics in New Zealand, the counting of metal tally?
Not particularly, but I'm happy to be in educated.
Well, they
creaming Australia, is that basically?
Yeah, the head of population, we're in a
battle. Are we number one?
Yeah, number one or number two with Jamaica.
Really?
In a bit of a battle, so wondered if you had any thoughts on how the team's been doing.
Yeah, offering residency to Usain Bolt, if I can have a great one to do. Haven't seen the best from that boy yet. Okay, thanks for asking.